Chapter 7. Attention to Detail.
You could have told me, Kyrus said.
He glared across his father's old desk, now claimed by his uncle Caladrius. The library was now his uncle's study. He remembered standing there as a boy, though it was Brannis who had been there, not he, begging his father's permission to enter the knighthood. The privilege of interrogation now lay on his side.
I could tell you a great many things. Many of them inadvisable. I had to consider the very real possibility that you would prefer Marouk dead a second time. How was I to know that he had information to bribe you with?
Caladrius asked, spreading his arms wide and leaning back in his chair. He smiled, but Kyrus thought he could detect artifice in it. It did not match his eyes, which were watching Kyrus too intently.
What else do you know?
I tire of piecing things together only to find out that I could have been told beforehand and saved the trouble. You tasked me with running a great many things with which you did not want to be bothered.
Are you having a change of heart?
Would you like to hear of every sordid scheme I have thwarted, of everything planned against you?
Do you want to hear all the clacksome gossip that gets dumped across my desk like pig dung and whispered to me like prophecy from a two-copper drunkard?
Caladrius asked, voice rising as he went.
You are a fine debater, Caladrius. I wonder how often such diversions took Brannis from his course. I shall not let it work on me, though.
You know the difference between what I wish to know and what you tell me. Tell me about my father's dealings in this world and the other. Tell me about the plots you hatched with Rashan. If you want me for an ally, I refuse to continue stumbling blindly in the shadow you cast.
Kyrus put both hands on the desk and leaned across. His eyes were locked on Caladrius's. Both men had shielding spells active.
I taught you a great deal, Kyrus, Caladrius said slowly, placing careful emphasis on the Telyaraki name.
You should take that into consideration when laying accusations at my feet. We shall be lucky to live through Rashan's reign. I need you alive and well to dispose of him. Not to mention a good deal more competent than you are presently.
Rashan reigns over nothing now. Emperor Somic does, and he delegated much of his power to me.
That is something that perhaps you...
Caladrius shot forward in his chair, a startling maneuver for so large a man. He put his face close enough that Kyrus could smell the brandy on his breath.
That I what? You think you run anything here that he cares about? Do you think you two whistling for the dog is what causes the beast to follow? This is Rashan's empire now. You handle the business that bores him, while he goes out and plays amid the blood. Your time is best spent preparing for the day he decides you are more a threat to him than an aid. Have you managed to learn anything of use that I have not spoon-fed to you?
Kyrus regarded him steadily, waited for him to settle back into his chair.
The strain is weighing on him. Kyrus realized. I shall gain nothing by antagonizing him.
Yes, I have. That book that my father's twin gave me had a few insights into a man named Aga, who he is convinced was Rashan's twin. It sheds little light on him other than what we already know of the warlock, except in the last entry. It tells of a stranger who came to Aga's stronghold, met with the old spymaster, and destroyed the whole place as he left. The writer had no explanation for it, but it seems clear that it was magic at work.
Really? Caladrius said, turning a vacant look upon a far corner of the ceiling.
I wonder, is it possible he managed the same trick as you, long ago?
All trace of anger in Caladrius had been washed away by the curious puzzle Kyrus had just laid before him.
Why kill himself, though? Kyrus asked.
It seemed an odd degree of trouble to go to for a suicide. He had not considered that the story showed a link between worlds, but a hint of who Aga might have been, what Rashan might have been doing around that time. Could the death of Rashan's twin have started him on a path to madness? Perhaps he did not want his life's work passed on to another, cleaned up his business before he moved along, so to speak. A normal man might not care, but a twin board just might. Unable to bear the thought of his organization living on without him.
Sounds like spite to me.
All the more reason to believe it.
Rashan seems nothing if not spiteful, Caladrius said.
Kairos frowned but said nothing.
That was never the impression I got of him.
It hints at Rashan's power, but I fail to see how it helps find a weakness, Caladrus continued. It gives a time period when he was in Tellurak, if that really is what happened, Kairos said.
Rashan seemed shocked that I had made it between Tellurak and Vaedris. Was that just a ruse?
Well, I have my suspicions about the accuracy of history when measured to an individual day, unless it was a noteworthy event, Caladrus said. From our side, there may have been nothing worthy of note.
Maybe Axterion, Kairos mused aloud.
The old cave wit? My father would be lucky to remember his morning feast most days. You want him to think back to 100 and more winters ago?
I think I do, Kairos said, turning to walk away. I can ask him about Zizix as well. I am beginning to think I am not foremost in Caladrus's worries.
Kairos, one last thing, Caladrus said. He had called after him just before Kairos left the wards that ensured their conversation was private. You say you wish to know of more of my little secrets. I have one for you that I had originally thought imprudent to share.
What is it?
Rashan confided in me that once he sees you married off to Celia, he intends to seek his heirs from Juliana, Caladrus said.
He fixed Kairos with a lewd grin, delighting in the look of murder in his eyes.
What makes him think?
Just his plan, mind you. I might see clear to getting you two sparrows in the same nest.
I could take Celia for my next wife that way. Good, healthy lass, you know.
Aunt Ferena is still alive, you bastard, Kairos said. His anger on behalf of Brannis's family no longer came as a surprise to him.
Just a matter of time, you know. She was never the same after Danny Lace's cradle fire, Caladrus said,
citing the rare condition that affected ether-strong infants. In Danny Lace's case, his had happened just before birth.
I am an important man, too hale and healthy to be without a wife. Good of the Empire, you know.
I hope Aunt Farah lives to see Celia turn sagging and gray, Kairos said. He ripped apart the ward and slammed the door behind him as he left.
Kairos wanted to see Axterion straight away, but he had an appointment to keep with Dolvain. The latest confrontation with his uncle had left his stomach gurgling and a burning sensation in his gullet that had nothing to do with harnessing ether. The bit about his aunt had nearly goaded him to violence, right there in the same library where he had sat as a boy, listening to his nursemaid read from Adventures of Boppy the Rabbit. The incongruity compounded itself when he remembered that it had been Brannis, not himself, who had experienced those memories.
Am I truly so much Brannis now? Soria may be right.
Iris's access to their shared memories was growing so acute that he often could not readily tell whose memories were whose, except by context. Iris's transference spell from the front courtyard of his familial home to Dolvain's was scant exertion. The more he practiced the spell, the more comfortable it became. He floated to the ground amid the flowers in Dolvain's back garden. Fully in bloom, they displayed a panorama of color. A gardener who saw him appear gave a curt nod and excused himself from the vicinity. At a small garden table set for two was the de facto High Sorcerer of Cadrin. With the warmth of late springtime, the pitcher of juiced lemons on the table seemed a pleasant offering, no matter how contentious the meeting promised to be.
"Good morning, Sorcerer Dolvain," Kairos called as he approached.
Dolvain looked up to the sun, which was playing hide from his lordship among the clouds.
"I suppose it is still morning, though just. Would you join me, Sir Brannis?"
Dolvain swept a hand to indicate the seat beside him. Kairos obliged him and sat looking out at the arrayed flora. Everything smelled sweet, from the flower-filled air to the lemony tang wafting from the pitcher.
"I presume you wish to discuss my standing with the warlock," Kairos asked.
He took the pitcher and poured a glass.
"Indeed, I can only consider that it is just a matter of time before you two come to violence. It is still my hope that you seek aid and take initiative to strike first."
"You are more practical than this. Surely you brought me out here for more than to repeat your same arguments again.
True enough. The demon and the emperor each grow more intolerable by the day. We do not see it with Roshan since he is away, but each time he returns he seems more rabid a wolf than when he last left, Dolvain said.
He took a sip of lemon to give Kairos time to speak.
You say that, but he seems little different to me, Kairos replied. You were next to him at the pageant. Who sends lightning after a founding day illusion? I ask you that.
Dolvain gave Kairos a challenging look, slipping once more into the role of an academic debater.
Fine, that I grant you. But he seemed worn a bit thin right then.
And it was an excellent likeness of the dragon jade fire.
I saw her at Rainsdark and had to remind myself that it was a mere illusion. My guts clenched at the sight.
Aye, my point precisely. You had every right to react just like him, but you, a neophyte, held your ground. Our proud and mighty warlock smeared his trousers and took violence to a puppet.
Very well. What say I stop playing the murderer's counselor for a moment and agreed with you? What then?
I am growing weary of dire warnings with no help behind them, Harris explained. Truly? Or is this another gambit to win an argument?
Dolvain clearly still remembered Kairos's ploy to retain Emperor Somek's authority before the inner circle.
Kairos paused a moment, lips pursed.
Dolvain was strong, stronger than Caladris or Fenris. That much was clear by their sources. Roshan was a mystery, his demonic source invisible, and his concealed power immeasurable. Perhaps he was no stronger than Iridan had been, just more skilled and focused. Iliardra had insinuated as much when she called Iridan a copy of Roshan, more than a mingling of her blood with his.
Truly. Very well, then, Dolvain said with a smile. We have a lot of planning to do before the Emperor makes a laughing stock of the Empire.
He lifted his mug and drained the remainder of his drink in one go.
Why? What has he done now?
Done? Still doing is more like it.
He's taken the simple task of picking out an empress and turned it into a jousting tournament of noble lasses. He's taking them to his bed two at a time to see which he likes best,
Dolvain practically shouted.
That sounds sporting, Kairos allowed, unsure how else to approach the subject. Does seem a bit crass.
He has paired them up by their dislike of one another. It has half the noble houses up in arms. They find it to be no suitable way to treat a future empress.
I wonder if he knows that, Kairos said with a hand to his chin.
He narrowed his eyes.
He could be waiting for the first to refuse his offer.
Dolvain scoffed. That blathering buffoon? He paused as if to consider his own objection. No, too sly a trick, I think.
It would fit well with Roshan's thinking. Emperor Somek spent a lot of time with little company but the warlocks. Have at least two reasons for anything you do, right?
Kairos looked off at the flowers, anywhere to avoid looking at Dolvain while discussing the subject.
Two? Picking an empress, and what else? Dolvain asked.
Kairos squeezed his eyes shut and pinched the bridge of his nose.
The obvious.
Oh, Dolvain said. He cleared his throat.
Yes, that.
I have another matter to get us clear of this sordid topic, Kairos said. I want you to make your peace with Caladris.
Fine sentiment, but that bovine uncle of yours is as good as a food taster for Roshan. I think Fenris a more likely ally, if we were both to approach him.
Caladris has been doing everything he can to keep Roshan in check, Kairos said, laying his uncle's duplicity at Dolvain's feet. He knows you work against Roshan and has kept that knowledge from him.
The fact that Caladris plays a layered game comes as little surprise. Have a care that he does not play it a layer deeper than you expect. Why else would he bare his plans to you? Naivete is one of the last traits I would ascribe to that gluttonous feline. You, however, may have fallen prey to a logical story and a familiar voice.
I think...
Kairos could not shake the feeling that Dolvain might have been right.
Just speak with Caladris. He already knows your stance, even if you are unsure of his. What risk is there to you?
An afternoon spent with that drunkard, Dolvain muttered.
If he doubts or troubles you, tell him, I know nothing, Kyrus said, the latter in accordion. He watched for a glimmer of understanding, but found none.
A password of some sort? Dolvain asked.
Something like that, Kyrus replied, his hopes of finding an alternate twin-born ally fading away. The vaulted ceilings of the Solaran dining hall echoed with the comings and goings of servants, the clatter of silverware, and the approach of a guest or the lone diner. 3 hours past noon was an unpopular time for a night's meal, but Axterion was wont to being in bed before the rest of the household took their evening repast. With the whole kitchen staff at his snap too, he had his choice of meal and a bit of peace to accompany it, except for days when he found himself beset by companionship. "Good afternoon, Grandfather," Kyrus greeted him. The ancient sorcerer turned to regard him as he approached. It was a reaction Brannis had seldom gotten. Between Axterion's failing eyes and Brannis's source being bright as a freshly blown-out candle, the old man had hardly laid eyes on his grandson. Kyrus shone in the ether well enough that Axterion could see him approach from out of doors to inside.
It was. Whether it stays that way remains to be seen, the old man said,
eyeing Kyrus warily as he spooned a mushy vegetable stew into his mouth. I have a matter that Uncle Caladrus was unable to help me with. Have you a few moments?
Ah, you have me trapped betwixt an empty stomach and a full bowl, and you well know it, Axterion observed.
He gave a little grunt for emphasis as he took another bite of stew. I have an odd matter to discuss.
Good. Gets boring about the place. Draw and cast, my boy.
I'm trying to trace back Warlock Rashan's whereabouts to before he left the Empire. I believe he went away for a while, shortly before the Battle of Dead Earth, Kyrus explained.
Well, makes sense, Caladrus is not knowing. At that time, I hadn't put the lad into your grandmother yet, Axterion said,
drawing a shudder from Kyrus at the thought. Can you recall the 6177th springtime since the founding? That was just prior to the Battle of Dead Earth, which was on the 37th of that springtime. I'm interested in, say, the 10th through the 30th, Kyrus explained. He had no idea how long Rashan might have taken to get to Acardia, or what other tasks he might have attended to while there.
I think so. Had a mighty fine time that springtime, what with the world coming to an end and all. Got a lot of living done in just a season. Focuses the mind, realizing you're bound for a shambling eternity of taking orders from Lorimar once he gets finished killing you.
What about Rashan? Do you remember what he was up to?
Looking under the stable hay for anything to throw in front of that necromancer's army, best as I can remember. That's about when he made that sword of his. It worked like a charm, too, if you fancy killing half the Empire's young sorcerers along with everything halfway to the horizon in every direction, that was either living or pretending to.
Did he go anywhere? Did he take leave? You were in the inner circle back then, were you not? You must have heard if he did.
Of course I was, Axterion replied, latching onto his pick of the questions. Young for it, too. They knew what they had on their hands. Bold, strong, good head on my shoulders.
But what about Rashan?
Seemed to remember him going on his knees to find an ally or two. Not his strongest skill, I might add. The stone folk told him to go bake in the sunlight. Fairly certain they find that insulting. Went looking for the spirits of Pottaway Wood, too. But if those rumors of forest spirits ever were true, they weren't any more.
Pottaway Wood, Kyrus echoed. Kyrus's mind went back to the Book of Prophecies. Seek a way among the spirits.
Aye, but just old spinster's tales, Axterion said.
His face twisted into a queer smile and chuckled at something that had apparently popped into his head.
Look at me calling anything old. Besides, those forest spirits are all holed up in the deep jungles of Elok, way off across the sea. No reason for a handful to stay behind, right beneath the Emperor's breeches.
Are you sure he did not find them? It is Rashan, after all, Kyrus persisted.
You can talk yourself in circles about that crusty old sack of lies. And yeah, I can call him old. But you have to trust your judgment. Discount him entirely and you waste knowledge. Listen with open ears, and he'll fill your head with deceit.
Maybe I can go have a look for myself.
Careful, lad. They don't use ether like we do. No draw. They just use it where it drifts. Not sure how they do it. Might be they take hold of that shiny source of yours and use it to twist you up like a bread knot.
What would you suggest, then? Kairos asked. Few in the family ever asked Exterion's opinion. He had spent most of Brannis's lifetime convincing them he was senile. It seemed only Brannis and Danil had caught on.
Might be that you can find that lass, Iliardra. Nice voice on her, but couldn't see her worth a 2-copper horse. Old as a dragon's tomb, though, by her word, Exterion suggested.
Kairos thought a moment. Exterion was in a helpful mood by his standards. Can I trust him? Who else has he talked to? I have no way to find Iliardra again, but I have heard of another who might know. Have you considered that the rumors of a demon ruling in Azat might be true? Kairos asked.
Rumor? Rumors are for the piddling folk. High sorcerers call them reports, and we get them sorted out to truth and lie. Of course there's a demon. Keeps Azat set off from everyone else's affairs, Exterion said.
He scratched his head and squinted one eye shut.
Name was Zizzlepick? Zippix?
Zizzix, Kairos offered.
Sure, if you say so, Exterion agreed. I've got a mind like an iron strongbox, rusty on the outside, but still sturdy where it matters.
Do you think I could trust him for advice? Kairos asked.
Why ask me, boy? I never met the thing. Haven't set foot in Azad either, though your grandmother insisted it would be pretty there, Exterion said.
She had been to Azad? Kairos asked. Brannis had never met his grandmother. She had died when Caladrus was young, and even he had little memory of her.
No, nothing that exotic. She just figured it would look like a Cardia, Exterion said.
Kairos's mouth hung open. He meant to say something, truly he did. The little workshop in his brain that assembled words into sounds was busy gawking out from his eyes as well.
What? You act like it was supposed to be some big secret. Anyone with half a brain was fooled by your impersonation. Those of us with full brains worked it out right off, Exterion said.
Kairos could see beyond the crotchety little frown to the bit of smugness tucked in behind it. You are twin-born? Kairos managed to put words to the obvious question.
Nah, but your grandmother was a nobleman's lass in Acardia, and told me all about that whole mess. She never got pulled into Rashan's pit of spies and informants. I protected her that much by my position.
How much do you know? Kairos asked, incredulous.
Assume everything and you'll be half right. I was high sorcerer for over 70 summers, boy.
Kairos looked about. There were no servants visible in either light or ether, but he leaned forward to whisper anyway.
Am I doing the right thing, undoing Rashan?
Kairos asked.
He is the one I can turn to, not Caladrus, not Dolvain.
One or the other of you won't outlive me. He never was right in the head, but he's worse than I remember him. I heard about the Founding Day pageant. It could be you one day that spooks him, you realize?
Kairos gave his grandfather a hug and left the wisest man in the Empire to finish his mushy stew.
The solitude of his office in Army headquarters was a welcome respite.
Kairos needed time to digest a great many words, many of them likely lies, and everything was quiet here except for the noises he created himself. The wards all about the room dampened every other sound, from the noise of the street to the adjacent offices and floors below. Kairos ran his hands over the speaking stone, finished in every way except for the activation. It was the last thing he wanted to take care of before setting off to find the reclusive ruler of Azat. He peered through the glassy surface. Layer upon layer of runes were built up within, each aligned to interact with those on the layers above and below.
The surface layer was laid bare before his seeing eyes, the one just below obscured but discernible. Past that, he had to send little jolts of ether into the device to illuminate the runes. It was far too little to activate the speaking stone, but still got the runes within to shine and reveal themselves. Kyrus sighed and rubbed his eyes. He had been staring for too long. The sun was growing dim in the sky outside his office windows. A silent effort lit the room, magically replacing the waning light. Kyrus reached for the teacup at his table side and found it empty. The teapot was likewise. "Hours, and no flaws found," he murmured to himself. "I can either send someone to fetch another pot and spend hours more, or just get it over with." Kyrus hesitated a moment, realizing that his conversation had taken place entirely one-sidedly. He shook his head, stuffing his thoughts back inside his mind where they belong. "I need a cat, I think." At least if he had a cat, he would have a creature close at hand to aim singly held conversations toward. It would dull the appearance of madness, if not protect against it. A few deep breaths steadied Kyrus's nerves. He positioned the crystal speaking stone on his desk at a comfortable distance. He would need to rest his hands upon it for however long the empowering took. Slowly at first he began to draw. The ether hearkened like hunting dogs to his call, alert to spring forth and obey upon a chance whim. He eased the ether into the outermost runes, watching it snake along the surface and flow inward like rainwater across cracked stone. The runes drank in the ether, sucking it down each layer with scant effort on Kyrus's part. Good, a promising start. The next layer was harder to watch, the glow of the outermost shining in his ether vision. Directing the flow took more concentration and required deflecting a few missteps. It was like watching the same cracked stone but through a rain-speckled window. It took more force of ether as well, but Kyrus's experience in shipbuilding had prepared him for the empowering to grow more difficult the farther down he pushed. The third layer proved bothersome. Kyrus was operating almost entirely by memory. He had carved the deeper runes a 10-day ago, and had not seen them clearly since. The blue-white radiance of the two outermost layers shone too brightly to make any sense of what lay below. Try, fail, and try once more. Eventually, Kyrus's efforts drove the ether through. At the fourth layer, the runes began pushing back in earnest. The errant flows sought misremembered pathways, and cost more effort with each failure. Kyrus increased his draw. By the fifth layer, he labored. He knew he had the strength and patience within him, but light swam before his eyes. The stone grew warm, and his hands sweated against the faceted surface, making it slick. Kyrus shut out his ether vision, guiding the flow by feel as he could no longer see enough detail to aid him. He felt the ether sink deeper into the sixth layer. He was nearing the end. He gave a great heave upon the ether and the light spell in the room went dark. All that remained was an angry orange luminosity growing within the speaking stone. The runes continued to push back against him. All progress halted, and no matter the ether Kyrus added, it did not advance any further. The glow merely increased. Once Celia had gotten over her shock and anger at being suddenly whisked off via Brannis's transference spell, she found herself missing the convenience of it as she traipsed across Cadrus, a city whose sprawling vastness once seemed so grand. Now it was a well-worn maze of hovels, shops, markets, gardens, and plazas. There were 1,000 ways through the maze, but obstacles moved about with irregularity, piling petty frustrations upon her with each trip. The army headquarters was a stark, ugly pile of stacked stone monoliths, with nary the touch of a female hand to be found. It was not so much that women were unwelcome there. The leering gazes and the gentlemanly words that greeted her each visit attested to that. It was just that they were given no consideration in the construction or design of the place. Celia exchanged pleasantries with the minor functionaries. She shared a perfunctory "good evening" with General Westell and inquired about his family. Though she had no affection for the old stodger, his family was well positioned, and it never hurt to be in their good graces.
Lieutenant Shale, who kept the closest watch on Sir Brannis, chatted with her a while and informed her about Brannis's state of mind.
"He said there was some fierce magic tonight, Sorceress Celia," Shale told her. "I'd wait for him to finish if I was you."
Thus she stood outside Brannis's office, waiting. She gave herself over to the ether as the fading light from the corridor windows gave way to nightfall and gloom. She stood watching the wards, not even finding the customary spot that Brannis usually left for knocking upon. Truly, he wished not to be interrupted. Her mission was routine, but orders were orders nonetheless. Caladrius had found out that Sir Brannis had been at Dolvain Estate for a meeting, and it vexed her superior that Brannis went about on his own, working toward ends he could not divine.
"Find out what he was there for," Caladrius had said. "Take all night if that is required. Rest it from beneath his pants if that is what it takes."
He could be downright crude when far enough down in his cups. A sudden blindness came over Celia as the wall of ether that had been warding Brannis's office went dark. She was disoriented for a moment, but the light from the ward was replaced by a shining beacon within the room. Unable to see the door in the ether any longer, she switched back to the light and allowed herself inside. There was a strange sensation, even before the door opened. She was unable to place it. Brannis was inside, hands upon the new speaking stone he had been working on. A ghastly orange light shone from the crystal, providing the only illumination in the room, save what little starlight entered through the windows.
"Celia!"
Brannis shouted, twisting about to look at her. She was unaccustomed to surprising him. She had thought he always kept one eye to the ether, knowing her by source before she even opened the door most visits. She had assumed he allowed the ward to fall to allow her inside.
"Stay back! I have to draw a dangerous amount to keep pace with this thing. It is threatening to force back all my ether, I think."
"Brannis, what are you doing?"
Celia asked, shouting over a throbbing sensation that she recognized as coming from her source. It fought back reflexively against Brannis's draw. The sensation grew more pronounced as she entered, though it was a good 6 paces to reach him.
"Runes shouldn't be doing that. They're glowing in the light."
"I know, but everything should be fine once I finish filling it. Just keep back in the meantime."
"No, something is wrong. Those runes were complex, but nothing that should be taxing you," Celia said. "Hold it steady a moment. Let me have a look at it."
"Poor idea. Having a hard time, keeping a hold as it is."
Celia looked to Brannis himself, previously distracted by the speaking stone. She noticed the look of pain on his face.
"He isn't going to be able to hold much longer if he doesn't finish empowering that stone."
She moved closer despite his warning. Rather than feel an increase in the ache in her source, she felt it ebb.
"Thank you. Let me have a look," Celia said.
She put her face as close as she dared, peeking around Brannis's long fingers as they trembled, holding onto the ruined device.
"I think I see a flaw inside."
"A flaw?"
Brannis shouted with a touch of panic.
"I doubt she'll get this filled before destroying it. I'm surprised you haven't already."
"I can't hold it any longer," Brannis said. "Get away! Run! Out the balcony and jump for it!"
He bowed his head over the stone and she felt his draw once more.
"Brannis, you're just making it..."
"Go!"
Celia turned and bolted for the balcony. She tore open the window door and rushed to the railing. She leaned over, and her stomach rose to her throat. The gloom well hid the street below, starlight shadowed by clouds, but she knew the height of that balcony.
"Jump!"
Brannis shouted. She turned to look at him. He had picked up the crystal, pulling it close to him, buried it against his stomach.
I can't.
She looked down once more, then back to Brannis. She saw him turn his back to her.
Boom!
Celia regained her sense of sight, but still saw floating spots before her eyes. There was a pitched whine that pervaded everything. She could hear nothing else above it. She screamed Brannis's name, but could not tell if her lungs held any breath to shout. Dizzy, she slumped against the balcony railing, surveying the devastation. The room was gone, largely. Kyrus had shielded the direction of the balcony with his body. Toward the other side of him, the blast had torn the building apart. The sturdy, ancient structure of stacked granite blocks was open to the air, more a courtyard surrounded by ruined walls than a proper building. The entire front was ripped open, making Kallax Square visible from where she sat, illuminated by flames from the explosion. She saw no bodies, but knew there must have been. She had spoken to too many men for them to have all exited the building in the few moments since she had seen them.
Kyrus?
She saw no sign of him. She switched to ether vision, but her ether sight was blinded. A wash of indistinguishable blue in all directions. She stood up to have a look for him in the light, but thought better of it as the balcony wobbled beneath her. A moment's careful, seated observation told her that it was she who swayed, not the remnants of the structure. On hands and knees, despite the peril to her dress, she crawled into what was left of Kyrus's office, enacting a small shielding spell after she cut her hand on glass shards. The floor of the room had collapsed, but not shattered. A sizable chunk lay propped at an angle, forming a ramp down to the rubble below. If anything was left of Brannis, it would be down there. She followed the floor down, turning to descend feet first, but the precarious slab was not up to the task. It gave way. Celia screamed. At least, she imagined she did. Her ears gave no confirmation, just a continuation of the same whine. She stopped midair before she got the chance to find out whether her shield was up to the task, more demanding than broken glass. The firelit stone jags had come just an arm's reach from piercing her midsection. She floated along, pulled by magic. She turned and saw Kyrus, clothes shredded to rags at the front, seated on the rubble of the ground floor, propped on an elbow. She drifted toward him.
His mouth moved, but what questions he might have asked of her,
she knew not. She did not feel the light grip of magic release her until she was pillowed atop him, gathered in his arms. The state of immediate shock wore off, with safety apparent. She buried herself in his chest and cried silently against his bare skin. He stroked her hair, and she felt a rumbling in him that must have been from speaking. Racked with sobs, with Brannis the one to comfort her, she could not imagine betraying him.
"Galadriel and Dolvain can both drift in the winds," she told herself.
Her arms were tucked up before her as she huddled in Kyrus's embrace. She felt for a cord about her neck. It ran down to where a small stone pendant hung, nestled quietly between her bosoms. It had been a gift from Rashaan. It might only work once, he told her, but it was time to call for aid.
"Treachery, warlock. Brannis betrayed by..."
She felt the stone twitch in her grasp, its magic spent. She tucked it back in its hiding place and allowed Kyrus to comfort her.